Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Melanated Faith Podcast. We are so excited to kick off season four with our first guest of the season, Jamie Grace. So if you don't know about Jamie Grace, I'm going to tell you a little bit about her. Jamie Grace is a Grammy-nominated singer, songwriter, and actress. She's from Atlanta, Georgia, and she has millions of followers across social media. Jamie actively advocates for joy and wellness and mental health through the lens of music, film, and faith. Diagnosed with Tourette syndrome, ADHD, and anxiety at a young age, Jamie has learned how not only to manage her life, but to thrive, and now lives to encourage others to do the same. Jamie chronicles this journey in her book, Finding Quiet. Jamie loves Jesus, her family, and tacos. So to learn more about Jamie Grace, head over to her Instagram page at Jamie Grace H. And without further ado, we want to welcome Jamie Grace to the show.
So Jamie, to just kick us off, I want to talk a little bit about your book, Finding Quiet. You write fondly about your childhood, your family, and you talk about being diagnosed at 11 with Tourette's and obsessive compulsive disorder and ADHD. And I guess I'm wondering kind of what was that like as a young Black girl in the South, especially I think there's a kind of still a stigma or a culture around, like, let's not talk about mental illness or mental health. And then did you find that sort of diagnosis constricting or any way, and how you kind of navigated that as a young kid?
Yeah. You know, it's actually really fascinating because you guys are the first people that I'm talking to since I've like gotten a, or maybe like the first people that have really asked me more about the diagnosis since I got access to my medical records. I'm just a huge nerd, and I was just so curious. I was like, I wonder what they were typing on that computer about me. And so it's actually one fascinating fact about my medical records is that I was it says in there that I'm a white female. And that's, you know, in no way true. And so I'm not sure, though, if that was the doctor or the nurses doing to help my case, because it's really hard to get a Black kid diagnosed in like the 90s, early 2000s with anything mental health related, or if that was just a mistype because they were like, there's no way all these symptoms are coming up. You know, maybe it was like another nurse that documented it later, but it's super fascinating. I was looking at it and multiple times and I referenced as a Caucasian female, and it kind of looks like somebody just went in and they were like, oh, this wasn't African American. Let me update, you know, this file. But yeah, so it was hard, you know, to get my diagnosis. I went to multiple doctors. You know, for those that don't know, Tourette syndrome is a movement disorder, tic disorder, uncontrollable movements and sounds called tics. And mine were so severe that, you know, what kind of a lot of parents typically think might just be, you know, a bad habit or like a nervous tick or something like that. There were leg twitches and arm twitches and all this stuff. So my tics were so bad that my parents said we got to go to the doctor. And then the doctor was like, go to a neurologist and all this stuff. And it was just typically just known for white boys or white males to be diagnosed with, you know, ADHD or Tourette syndrome or things like that. And so I had a neurologist say that I had something called psychotic eyes, which is not real. I had like all these different doctors be like, well, we think it's problems with her sleep. And so I was put through like weeks and weeks of testing, like all these different things that they just kept saying it could be, because every time the conversation of like, no, we think it could be a mental health issue, it was just shut down because of my race and because of my gender. And you know, these are things that were told to my parents' face. And so it was just frustrating as a kid. I just remember, like, I mean, at least once or twice a month having to go to these 4 to 5 hour appointments as like a 10-year-old and just sitting there and just being like, I've had to tell the same story 1,000 times. Like, I've had to sit here and just let them see my body, you know, borderline C's, just for them to believe me, you know. And it was just really frustrating. And so getting my diagnosis was very freeing and was very liberating. My mom is the one that technically diagnosed me. She printed out miles and miles long of paper, which that was a big deal in 2002 to like print that much paper. And she printed like all these websites from like Internet Explorer. She was like, look, I know what my kid has. And I had an amazing doctor in the state of Georgia. His name is Dr. Hunkos. And he was like, oh, yeah, this actually makes a lot of sense. I had finally gotten with a really good doctor at that point. So yeah, it was liberating at first. Of course, from a medical perspective, it ended up being challenging just because like there's no cure and then I had to deal with all the medication and everything. But just from like a personal standpoint, it was very liberating to actually have a name to what was going on and for people to actually affirm like, yeah, this isn't in your head. You're not making this up. Like you do actually have a tic disorder. So
yeah. Yeah, shout out to Black moms who are just like teach themselves medicine to advocate for their children.
Seriously.
So we're so grateful for that. So did you feel like that, like once you had a diagnosis, like culturally, like your family came around you, or did you feel like still like that there was like a stigma associated with saying, you know, like I have Tourette's syndrome, especially I think given what you said about it being typically associated with white males?
Right, right. Definitely my parents and my sister. I mean, you know, my sister's my claim to fame, Morgan Harper Nichols, the poet. And so definitely the three of them were, you know, very supportive. My dad was a pastor of a small church, and I think we did kind of like make a little bit of like an announcement, but like not in a weird way. Like I was super comfortable with it because my tics were so obvious at between like 9 and 15. It was like, if you saw me, you saw my arms moving like a lot. You saw, you know, accidentally punching myself in the stomach and like, you know, kicking my butt with my foot all the time, like every 20 seconds. And so I was actually really grateful to be able to kind of stand in front of my church and be like, hey, I want to teach you about something, because it was just super helpful. I'm always intrigued because like I kind of wish I could go back in time and expound on the way that I explained myself. I don't know if that makes sense, but just be what I was mostly dealing with at the time was just severe tics. Mm-hmm. I was dealing with some anxiety and depression and ADHD as well, but that just wasn't even at the front of my brain at all because my tics were so severe. So I think that helped a lot with like talking to a Black church and talking to extended Black family, you know, because it wasn't like, hey guys, I have depression, which I think is more of a trigger word of a negative connotation, which is sad to even that we have to even think that way. But it's like, because it was, I was so visibly something was up, I think it kind of helped, you know, kind of give them understanding a little bit. I definitely did have people in my life and in my extended family that made negative comments. And, you know, I got a couple of comments that were like, well, as you get older, you know, don't tell people that you have it because they're going to think of you a certain kind of way. Or, you know, certain parents are like, I don't want you playing with my kids because it's contagious. It's not. They just thought it was. And I would tell them, hey, just so you know, brain stuff is not contagious. And they were like, well, just in case, you know, I had a few people think it was like a demon and stuff like that. My parents are just like, well, we just ain't gonna hang out with them then. So
yeah, that's right.
I think having protective parents definitely helped. But yeah, so I faced a little messiness, but I think because my family was just kind of like that, it kind of helped shield me from too much of it.
Yeah. Now that makes a lot of sense. I mean, and thank God for good parents to like shield you from the mess, because people can be so messy. So what a lot of people might not know is that you were definitely a teen star in the Christian pop music, you know, community. And so I know for me, I remember because I was homeschooled and there was not very many people in the bookstore. And I used to work at a Christian bookstore when I was 16.
Yeah.
And I remember seeing your CDs. I was like, there's another Black girl. You know, it was like you and Nicole C. Mullen and CeCe Winans. And
yeah.
I don't know, a few others. Like, there just were not
it's
very many.
It's a very small group. It's like already not a lot of women in like CCM. And then on top of that, like, women of color and then Black women. It's a very small group. Yeah.
A super niche group. So you write in your book, you said, somehow as my career grew and changed, I felt the need to change too. The joy in writing to worship was gone, and my number one priority became writing for work. I think we all had those experiences, right? When you're doing something that you love, and what you love becomes your work, and it kind of saps your, you know, inspiration.
Yeah.
But what I want to know is, how did teen stardom impact you long term?
Yeah.
And what adjustments have you made now to ensure that you have longevity as a creative?
So, yeah, basically, I am still learning how much being very known at a young age can have an impact on your life. Some of it is good. Like, a lot of it is good. I have a very strong, like, sense of, like, self-awareness. Like, I'm very self-aware. I'm very conscious of the choices I make and the things that I say. And, I, even like with social media, like, I'm very intentional with the things that I post. And so I'm really happy about a lot of the things that I have learned, because when, like, just everybody, a lot of people know you at like 18 or 19 years old, like, you just kind of develop a sense of like, okay, I better figure myself out, you know, and I better figure out how I want people to see me quick, you know? So I'm grateful for that. But at the same time, like, there's a lot of, there's still a lot of trauma that I've had to work through, and that I've, you know, would dare say that I'm still working through. I think, you know, we kind of all are with our teen years, of just trying to figure out, like, you know, it got to a point where, like, I was making songs that were, like, bringing people joy and, like, making songs that are making people happy. And that's so exciting. But then it's to the point where it's like, well, if you don't make songs that don't make people happy, then you can't pay your bills. And if you don't make songs that can't make people happy, then you're no longer relevant. And if you're no longer relevant for 2 weeks, then some other girl's going to swoop up and take your spot in the industry. Like, you know, it's this concept of, like, there's not a few black women because there's few black women that can do this. There's few black women because that's how many people will be here. So like, get that in your head and be the top of the game or be nothing here. I was told very early on in the industry, like, hey, you're gonna last 2 albums. Like, that's what women do here, and you'll be done. And so, you know, and I'm like, well, by your standards, I am done. But, you know, by the Lord's standards, I ain't thinking about you. But yeah, so it was super hard. And it was, like, to a point where I was just like, I got really annoyed because I started, like, connecting with other female artists, like, on the road and stuff like that. And they would, like, multiple women would say things to me like, yeah, like, I'm not really supposed to be friends with you because, like, my label, you know, sees this as competition, so I'm kind of supposed to keep my distance and stuff like that. And it really was just one of these kind of like, look, there's only space for so many women up here, and there's only space for so many black women up here. And so it's like, choose every step that you take wisely so that you don't lose all of this that you have worked hard for. And so I just felt the pressure to continue to do that, to be, you know, as safe as I could as a black woman, you know, to keep my hair straight, to keep my hips looking small, to do whatever it is that I had to do to be safe and to be joyful and to never show pain and to never show sorrow. And if I did, not in the process, but only after, once I've recovered, like, I was becoming this calculated version of myself. And I was just like, I'm not interested in this. Like, you know, I want to be able to be every part of who I am and not have to think so harshly about every step that I'm taking just for the purpose of currency. So yeah, so all of that was going on. And I mean, a huge part of it, it sounds so cliche, but just taking really intentional breaks really helps me to not burn out, if you will. You know, and also not announcing my breaks. Sometimes I do announce breaks because it'll be like, you know, the end of a season on my podcast or something like that. But sometimes I'll just kind of like make a mental note of like a certain type of break. Like, I'll be like, I'm not going to show my face in my story for 14 days. And I won't tell people that. I'll still be as active as ever. They'll never notice that, unless they're, you know, just creeping. They'll never notice that I'm not showing my face for 2 weeks. But it'll be so nice and so refreshing and so good. And so, yeah, that's really how I'm keeping myself sane and how I'm able to, you know, breathe and everything. And then as far as like just getting rid of that industry pressure, I mean, I'd made a choice to walk away from unhealthy professional relationships. You know, I think a lot of times we, as millennials especially, we can start talking about like personal growth and like, oh, you need to break up with that person or have boundaries with that friend and that kind of thing. But then in our professional lives, we're just like being walked over and taken advantage of and all this stuff. And so I was just like, you know what? You messy, you drinking too much, I'm stressed out, you abusive and fixed. Like, no, I'm done. Bye, sweetie.
No, that's good. I mean, I'm just thinking about what you're saying about how, like, you know, the just the pressure that Black women go through in terms of our appearance alone.
Yeah.
I mean, it is just so much that is expected for us to be accepted in predominantly white spaces. And all I could think of when you're talking, it's like, isn't that just like white supremacy to pit Black women against each other?
Right.
To tell you how to look, how long your longevity is going to be in your career, and what to do in order to survive in this environment and be as successful and as they determined for you to be. And I think that is something that people oftentimes, I think, do not realize for us as Black women is the pressure. You know, if I change my hair, I mean, I used to change my hair on the weekends before work because I'm like, I want you to, we're resetting. It's a new week. So my hair is different, but it's a new week. So just, this is where we're at. And like, just the thought, like all the things you have to go through with your appearance, because you know, you're going to have so many questions. People have thoughts about how you look and, you know, don't gain 20 pounds. You know what I'm saying? Like, I mean, this is just, it's just so unreasonable.
Yeah.
And then when you're talking about faith communities, especially those, even those standards, I mean, it's just all very Eurocentric, and it does not allow Black women to be expansive in who we are and bring our full selves. So I'm glad you liberated yourself, because sometimes people are waiting for somebody else to liberate them, and you just need to liberate your own self.
Girl, I don't even think I realized that I was being suppressed for so long, you know. And I think a lot of it is, I don't know, I think a lot of it is because, you know, surface wise, like if I look back at everything that I've created and shared, it's me, you know, it's like, it's me. I'm so proud of myself, because I always hope the songwriters of this song never listen to my stuff, because they will know exactly what I'm talking about. I'm sorry, y'all, but there was just this one time where this song was, I was supposed to do this song, and I recorded it and everything because I was just trying to be nice, which is so bad. I recorded it, everything, and I barely ever released, I've only released two songs that I didn't write in my whole 13 years. And I recorded it to be nice, and it was supposed to be released. And then like weeks before, I like made a phone call crying, and I was just like, I'm not trying to be mean, but the song is bad, and I cannot do that. And so thankfully I said that, because it helped me to be able to say this next statement, which is, everything I've released, I love. Everything that, if you Google, you know, any picture that you see of me or song you hear, like, that's why it was so confusing sometimes that I didn't know that I was dealing with suppression, because I was being my authentic self. But the issue is that there were parts of my authenticity that were being suppressed. You know, it's not that I was pretending to be this Southern girl that loves horses and Reba McEntire. It's just that I also wasn't allowed to say that I grew up east of Atlanta and I grew up in the hood. Like, I also wasn't allowed to say that. It was like a cherry picking of the safe parts of who I am. So liberation has felt so weird to me in so many ways, because it's like, people will hear me talk about Juneteenth and they're like, oh, that's so cool to hear you talking about Juneteenth now. And I'm like, look, baby, I've been celebrating Juneteenth. I just couldn't tell nobody. So it's not that I was not who I is be now. It's just that I was keeping it a secret because you was going to be scared. Like, because I was right. The first black person you ever heard singing. So I didn't know what you were going to say. Like, so it's weird, right. But I don't know. It feels good. It feels good to not be, to not feel like I can only, you know, it's very much a code switching situation. You know, like I was just like, well, when I'm here, I can only be these parts of who I am. And when I'm here, I can only be these parts of who I am. But now I just don't care.
No, that's really good. I mean, and I think that's like a common experience that like lots of black women or women of color can identify with, right? Like you have like a work persona, mm-hmm. and maybe you have who you are in your family and who you are at church. And I really think, you know, one thing for Faith and I that we hope and that you're like helping us with is like, how do you show up as your authentic self? And like, knowing that there might be consequences, because I think sometimes it's like people hear, oh, you're doing this for acceptance. Mm-hmm. And it's like, no, literally, I need to feed my family. Yeah. So it's like,
oh, yeah,
I want you to like me, not as an end of itself, but so that I can make a living. Yeah. And so that I can have access to like these platforms and stages, because otherwise it feels like, you know, I won't be invited anywhere if, you know, I celebrate Juneteenth and mm-hmm. I also like Tupac or Nipsey Hussle. Yeah. So I'll just talk about Taylor Swift.
Yeah, exactly.
And
yeah.
Jeopardy.
You know? Oh, but I love Jeopardy. Like,
I do too. And that's what they try to do to my show. We'll let that
girl,
go. But
oh my gosh, I'm so mad about LeVar. Sorry. So I'm taking us so mad. So left field. I'm just mad.
No.
So upset about that.
And that it's a whole situation where, of course, here's an opportunity to do something new and fresh, and we're just going to stick with what we've always done. Never mind that Alex Trebek actually said he wanted a black man to succeed him. But, literally,
he made many different points, even gave a specific name at one point. Yet it's like, oh, well, he's gone now. We're just going to look.
But see, this will tell you, this is a lesson. Y'all be doing too much. You put yourself in a position you're not well qualified for, and you mess up your whole bag. Now the man is in unemployed. Mm-hmm. When all he had to do there was sit there and eat his food.
Seriously. Oh, come on now. That'll preach.
Ugh. I mean, just, you know, let the process play out. Now you're sitting at home looking silly. Okay. Back on track. But I thought something you said was, like, really profound. And then it kind of builds on something, another quote you said about, like, pretending that you weren't in pain or like stuffing those kinds of emotions down because what people wanted was kind of this like happy, joyful Jamie Grace.
Yeah.
And they wanted songs that also mimicked that kind of wanting that kind of joy. And I guess my question would be, one, I think, how do you manage, you know, showing up as your authentic self?
Yeah.
You talked a little bit about kind of setting your own boundaries. How did you come to that? And yeah, like, how do you protect yourself from kind of breaking down? And how do you have, like, some sort of internal, like, Jamie, you need to be real with yourself right now. Like, you're upset kind of warning signal.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like, yes, I do have a warning signal, but I also have very honest people in my life. So, you know, I've mentioned my sister and, you know, and she ain't got no kind of shame. And she's actually how I don't talk too much about the specifics of leaving the record label, but she really helped me through that process. I walked away from a label that I was with for a few years and she was a huge part of my emotional stability through that. And so, and you know, I've been married now for 3 years. I became independent like 5 or 6 years ago. So that was a much longer time ago. But like my husband now, like he's very much like, hey, you seem a little overwhelmed. You know, the other day I was like producing like a song or something and it just sounded in a good way. Well, I feel like I don't have to say in a good way to y'all because y'all know that I mean it in a good way. But it sounded a lot more ghetto than my other stuff does. And he was like, yeah, yeah, yeah. Like, you know, like my husband's like super black, St. Louis black. So he's very affirming of like when stuff is a lot more ghetto or urban, you know, that I'm working on because it's just good to have those people in your life that are affirming when you're doing the stuff that's authentically who you are. And then also that are going to call you out when you're not. But I would say, I mean, this is like very, to some people this might sound elementary, but to me, I think it's good to stick with the basics. Communication and just communicating feelings is just so healthy. And the other night, Aaron, my husband, and I, we had a date night, and so the baby was home with my parents, and we sat in the car, and I just like we went to go get cookies, and then we ended up taking way too like talking before even going in there, which I used to think when married people talked about this kind of stuff that they meant something else, but we were literally just talking, and we were just sitting in the car. And just, I was just talking through all the stuff that's getting on my nerves right now in the world. And also all the things that really overwhelm me in my own life. And all of the things about my career that make me feel overwhelmed. And all of the recent DMs and Instagram comments that have made me feel some type of way. And just talking through every little thing about how I feel, just that, to me, that is as authentic as we can get. Even if we're not naturally feelers, if we're more thinkers or whatnot, I don't know if you guys are into the Enneagram at all, but like I'm an Enneagram 7. And so it's not even like my natural instinct to be like, this is how I feel. But I've just noticed that like that is as real as I can get is my feelings, you know, not my thoughts, because those can often deceive me, you know, not my plans, because that is usually a goal that I've not yet reached, not my hopes for other people or relationships with other people, but just how I feel. And it's just a good way to just kind of like check in with myself. And I mean, this is going to sound so preacher's kid cliche, but even like a couple weeks ago, I was really, my therapist, like she changed her office hours and stuff. I guess she hates me. And so I had to like change days. I'm still mad at her about it. So I was like, I'm just kidding. But I just switched days. And so it was the day that I usually would be in therapy. And I was literally, y'all, this is such a cliche preacher's kid story. But I was home by myself. So I was walking through the house, just saying all the stuff that I wanted to say to her. Because sometimes I'll just pretend like I'm in therapy or being interviewed by Oprah. And like, that's how I feel like my most authentic self is either therapy or my Oprah interview. So I'm doing all this stuff for Super Soul Sunday. And y'all, oh, this is so cheesy. But I realized I had my eyes closed. I opened my eyes and my hands were folded like I was praying. And wow. I was like, oh my gosh, I'm so stupid. Like I could just be talking to Jesus. Like I literally like, I'm over here like, and don't get me wrong, I love therapy. And I bet Super Soul Sunday has blessed so many people. But I was like, oh my gosh, y'all, prayer. Like, that's the thing I need right now. And like, I forget to pray. And it's not like I forget about Jesus, bro. I have ADHD. How am I supposed to remember stuff? Like, I forget to pray. So I was like, oh yeah, like that's that thing that I can just be honest and be mad and be real and be grateful and be supported and be thankful. Like that's my safe space. Like that is home to me, you know? And yeah, it was so cheesy, but so sweet. I didn't even realize my eyes were closed. I just opened my eyes and I looked at my hands. I was like, oh, thank you, Jesus. That's what you do. You be listening.
I be forgetting sometimes, but then I remember, call on Jesus.
It was nice too. I just put it all out there. And it made, because like you were saying, like, you know, sometimes we have our work versions of ourselves. And like, you know, it's weird if like sometimes like if all your friend groups get together, you're like, uh-oh, like what words can I say? Like,
oh, my gosh.
Yeah. Like they're not all my sometimes close friends my on Instagram. Nightmare. They don't know. You know what I mean? Like, it's kind of scary. So like to an extent, like it's, you know, it's not like it's inherently bad. Like we have different versions of ourselves that we express in different ways at different times. So like that is okay. But it's just getting to that, like not like absolute, you know, and I even think too, it's like, we can't, you know, I used to always like be yourself. And yeah, that's a huge component. But if we were all naturally 100% ourselves, like no makeup, like no extensions, like gluten-free, dairy-free, like if you're allergic, I'm not picking on you, but like, you know, all the stuff, like all natural, then we would literally be nudists. And like, I don't want to be a nudist. And so I can't be an all natural me 24/7. That's not an option for me.
Yeah, no. And I think even to what you're saying about even in our relationships, because like if I was myself all the time, I probably would have no friends, because all the time, like sort of I had a boss that always talked about his redeemed self and his unredeemed self. And I feel like my unredeemed self is very selfish and demanding and very like prefer to be alone and isolated. And I feel like my redeemed self is like, no, relationships are important. You can't have your way all the time and that kind of thing. And so I think, what you're saying is so wise about, like, even if you are different in different situations, like, that can still be fully who you are. And maybe not be yourself is maybe not always the best advice.
Right, exactly. I think it's just, you know, I mean, of course, I don't have a perfect formula for it. But when you get down to, like, you know, just like, how do you feel? You know, if you feel like you're trying, if you feel like you're masking, if you feel like, you know, or even another question that, you know, my mom used to ask us my whole life, like, what are your intentions? You know, are you acting this way because it makes you feel good? Well, then, yeah, that's probably a part of who you are. But are you acting this way because your intention is to be liked, or your intention is to fit in, or your intention is to get laid later? Like, what are your intentions? If you ask yourself these questions, then you can start to be like, okay, maybe this isn't my authentic self. You know, maybe, and maybe this isn't even a component of who I am. Maybe I was just trying out a new personality and I need to not do that again. You know, like, we've all done it. Like, if you haven't done it, then I don't understand you. But we've all, I don't know, like, sophomore year of college, I was like, I'm going to be my new self. And I was like, no, she's not fun.
I mean, honestly, it's just one of those things. Like, I think it's just, whenever I think about that age when you're trying to, like, decipher, like, who am I? Who am I growing into? What do I want to be? Like, I just think it's one of those moments where we just all kind of have to, like, sift through that and process. And also, I firmly believe that different people bring out different parts and aspects of who you are.
Oh, you know?
And so there's certain friends that, you know, I call my turn up friends, where, like, I know I can turn up with them safely. Yeah. Okay. And then there's certain friends that are like, you know what? If they just want to relax, they're more quiet, we're just going to do something and be super, super chill. And there's friends that feel like family. So, like, you know, it's a little, I can be even, you know, more of a full, you know, like, version of myself, if you will, with people that you trust that are, you know, they're tightly with, you know, there's just different versions of people who bring out different parts of you.
Girl, yeah. I know, like, I know what friend to call if my husband, he would never get on my nerves, because I would never say that my husband does that. But if my husband is getting on my nerves, I know which friend to call, because I know that she's going to have my back. She's going to support me. And then she's going to ask, what did I do? Like, just, she's just going to check. She's going to make sure, see if I contributed. But I also know a specific friend, and, like, I would just say it. Her name's Kristen, because she knows her. She knows that if I call her and I say he got on my nerves, she'll be like, I'm gonna beat him up. Where is he? What'd he do? Like, I mean, and, you know, like, I love her dearly, but, like, we both know, like she's she's my ride or die. Like, I don't care. Even, like, I don't care if it's somebody that I said, you know, I love them forever. Like, they're my, or they're my favorite musician or my favorite band. She's like, if they put out a song you don't like, I'm gonna go beat them up. Like, it's just, it just is what it is. Like, so you're totally right on that. It's just, we got to know which friends are there for which purpose. And, you know, if a body only has arms.
I love when that Hunter's kid comes out. I feel like we're getting so many mini sermons. I think I'm gonna write down like, when you said, if I'm not thinking about you, or that was so good. When you were like, God's not thinking about you, I'm not thinking about you. Like, whatever I have for myself, you know, because I think the competition thing is so strong.
Thank you.
In Christian spaces. Speaking of Christian spaces, do you find messaging around mental health and anxiety to be harmful? I think, especially when you think about something like anxiety, it seems really popular right now. I'm just going to go ahead and say it. Like, if you struggle with anxiety, that the solution is, like, you need to pray more. You're not trusting God. And it's not like, no, sweetie, you need a therapist and Lexapro. Like, there is, like, this sort of demonization of...
Right.
Of, like, legitimate therapy and medication. Right. And so I'm just wondering if you have found that to be true for you in Christian spaces, and then how, what would you say to someone who feels like they're struggling, but they're getting a lot of that maybe quote unquote toxic messaging?
Yeah. You know, I, I definitely think it's harmful to exclusively tell someone, okay, well then, you know, pray more. It always blows my mind that Christians have such a hard time with mental health. Like this is always what sits with me, because I'm like, how, like, okay, you're having a hard time with this because it's not physical. Because certainly if like I cut my hand and it was bleeding, you'd be like, oh no, you want a Band-Aid? So like if I tell you like, hey, I feel anxious, then why are you saying, oh no, you want to pray? Like it, not saying you can't pray, but like it just blows my mind that Christians have a hard time processing mental health as an actual need. Because like, yeah, you can't see it, but like that's literally what faith is the thing you can't see. So like, why are we the people struggling with it out of all the peoples? Like that's our whole thing, is that we vibe with something we can't see. Like that's the whole thing. So it's always, that's always confused me. But I think it's just, it's more so this concept of like, you know, of course the Bible does say, you know, be anxious for nothing. And I think that that scripture gets misinterpreted a lot of just like, well, the Bible says don't do it, you know, like, so it must be a sin if the Bible's saying don't do it. And not even to get too theological, even though I'm like a huge nerd and I'm like, let's break it down. But like, not even to be too theological about it. It's just that one of the best ways that I heard it explained was that anxiety is not this one size fits all concept or construct. There is actual good anxiety. Like that's a thing. You know, if you are walking home at night and it's dark and you hear, you know, fast paced breathing and then you hear like a gunshot, you know, the feeling that you're feeling right now is called anxiety. And that is a good feeling because it will help you go home and maybe not ever walk around at nighttime at the dark time all by yourself again. Like that's a good feeling that you're having because it's teaching you something, right? I bet every like psychologist that listens to your show is like, you explained that poorly. Anyways, but y'all know what I'm talking about. So yes, anxiety is not an inherently bad thing. And I truly believe like when the word of God is talking about like, don't be anxious for nothing, I don't think it's telling us, hey, you're sinning if you do this thing. I think it's just saying, I don't want you to have this thing. I don't want you to be afraid. It doesn't say you're never going to be afraid. It's just saying, no, don't do it. I don't want that for you.
Yeah.
But we live in a broken world. And I don't think Jesus wants people to get their, get in car accidents and to be paralyzed either. But it happens. And so we are horrible people if we're just yelling at them saying, well, you need to pray it away and just pray that it stops when it's out of our control. And so that's kind of the gist of like my intro to it, if you will, of what just like these are like mental health is not something that people can just control or stop in the same way that physical health is not something that people can just control or stop. You know, people actually have like anxiety disorders. And then just everyday humans, like you said, it's very popular right now because of a million different reasons, because people just feel everyday anxiousness and they're told the extremes of either you better pray it away or like, oh, must be a tenfold anxiety disorder. And so, you know, for somebody that is dealing with that and they're just like, I'm not sure, you know, where I should go from here because I feel like a bad Christian or I feel like I'm not Christian enough or whatever because I don't believe and I still, you know, or because I believe and I still have pain or whatnot. The first thing I would say is get all up in the book of Job. Like, read the book of Job. You know what? Let me rephrase. Read the first chapter of Job. You don't even have to get through the whole book. I mean, you should. Like, you definitely should. But just carve out half an hour. It's in the Bible. You might think it says Job. And it is fascinating. That man went through. Like, spoiler alert, everybody gonna die. And it's gonna be sad. It's going to get dark, but it's going to get so much better too. I think that book is so helpful to watch someone deal with anxiety and to watch someone deal with depression and to watch someone deal with loss and abandonment and isolation and rejection. Like that first chapter was so pivotal for me as a young adult. The next thing I would say to do, if you're feeling like people from the church are telling you like, oh no, you can't have anxiety, you shouldn't be stressed, like you can't feel isolated, whatever, is to read the passage. It's in the Bible more than once when Jesus is on the cross. And there's a moment where Jesus says, my God, why have you forsaken me? Like, if Jesus is allowed to feel abandoned, if Jesus is allowed to feel forsaken, then you shouldn't have your feelings invalidated either. The pain and the fear and the insecurity that you feel from mental health complexities and anxiety and depression, those are real feelings. Those are your feelings. So sit with them. Don't sulk and don't idolize and, you know, put these feelings on a pedestal, but feel them. Allow yourself to feel them. Because the only way that you're going to understand the privilege of joy and the acceptance of joy is if you know what the other side feels like. You know, I mean, it joy is great, but like, have you ever had joy after sadness? Like, it's phenomenal, you know? So those are kind of like the more, you know, biblical, like connecting with your feelings and your being like accepting that it's okay to feel those things. But the, you know, after that, of course, you know, I just say like, there are some really great churches that are being really intentional about counseling services and things like that, that are free. A lot of churches have that kind of thing. There are also like actual counselors that you can connect to. I'm in counseling every week and I love it so much. It's so helpful. But you can also do like group therapy. I'm such a huge fan of support. I'm such a huge fan of the village. This is the old fashioned concept of just like, it takes a village to raise a child. And so I just think everybody needs a village. Everybody needs a godmother, a godfather, like, you know, that auntie, uncle, that extra bonus person in your life that's praying over you. Like that viral TikTok sound that's going around right now. But I had a praying grandmother. Like, everybody needs that, bruh. And so, yeah, man, I know that's kind of an elongated answer, but I'm just like you can try, but you ain't gonna get through this by yourself. Like, it's just like, let's just be real. Like, you took a great first step by listening to this podcast. So go get you a Faith and a Catherine in real life. Like, that's what you're gonna need. Like, not trying to get political. Are they vaccinated? Can they wear a mask? 6 feet? Meet in the park? Like, something.
That's good.
You need to see some people.
That's so good. I just met with my therapist today. Absolutely love her. Been working with her since I was 25, and no regrets about like having that kind of extra layer of somebody to help me not only get outside of my head, but like, you just help me process through other situations, right? And navigate, you know, life in the space that I'm in right now.
I'm so jealous. You've had the same therapist for 5 years.
Yeah.
That's amazing. I've moved out of state. So like, you know, typically if you move out of state, you have to get a new therapist. It just depends on like where their license is or whatever. Not all of them, but just like some of them.
I mean, we'll talk more offline about some more things that I will share.
And I will just say with that, though, because of the pandemic, lots of, you know, I have lots of counselor friends that are taking virtual clients, and the like the BetterHelp and Talkspace, like.
Yes.
There are a few new rules. I will say that. There are a few new rules now that allow therapists to do more online work. So there are some things that have definitely changed, especially because of the pandemic as of late.
Oh.
We'll still circle back.
And I will also say this as a therapy encouragement, especially for Black girls. It's like dating. The first one you go to might not be a good fit for you. And so don't. I have an experience. Yeah. Like, it's okay if they don't understand you, or you feel like they're accusatory, or they don't understand your experience, or you need to talk through systemic racism or patriarchy or whatever. You can just find another one. You can break up.
You can break up.
It is like dating. You can break up.
For sure.
Yeah. Yeah. And you can also not tell them any of your business until you're ready. Like, that's also an option. Like, pick something that you can talk about, or even you don't have to talk about anything, but you can like pick like a story from fifth grade or just like, you can pick a story from TikTok. Don't do that. Tell the truth. But you see, like, cause I am a natural talker. So I'll go into a therapist's office and I'll be like, listen, my period last week. And then they're looking at me like, oh, you ready? Like, you ready to talk about it? But you don't have to do that. You can just go into therapy and be like, so tell me where you got your license. Where'd you get your degree? I want to know about you. What do you have to offer? Yeah. And like y'all said, you don't have to marry the first one.
Yeah, you can definitely interview your therapist and see if you're a good fit. I recommend that.
You can even ghost them if you have to.
Don't marry the first one. You can break up. Ask them questions about themselves.
They still got paid.
That is the truth. No, this is good.
I think this is really good advice, because I've had so many friends, particularly Black females, you know, work up the courage to go to therapy, you know, because there's a stigma in our community, and they don't have a good first experience, and then they just like give up. And I just think like letting people know on the front end, I love your idea about like, yeah, don't tell them anything too personal, like pick a random story and just see how they do.
Yeah.
Know? Yeah.
Right. I mean, maybe this is a good theory too. How about we normalize picking three therapists, and then you just cancel once you figure out their cancellation policies, and then you cancel once you find one you like.
People, that might not hurt. Like if you want to try therapy, line up a few different sessions and see which one, you know, works best.
Yeah. And then you're like, Bob on Wednesday, he wasn't great. Good thing Sheena's tomorrow.
No, I mean, that's a good idea. Okay, so this is the last question that we have before we go into Go Off Sis, which we're really excited you're going to participate. What are you hopeful for right now? There's a lot of things going on, the pandemic, mental health, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
But what's something you're hopeful about?
Yeah, man, a lot of things for sure. I'm just, you know, I'm hopeful for art, honestly. I listened to a Sarah Bareilles interview a few weeks ago, and she understands my brain a lot. I don't like know her at all, but she understands my brain. And she said that she was looking around the pandemic, and she was like watching all of her friends like make all this art during the pandemic. And she was looking at them like, I'm depressed. Like, what is wrong with y'all? Like, how are y'all creating right now? And I feel the same way. You know, I was creating in the beginning of the pandemic, and I've still been creating, but I'm very hopeful about the art that is to come. I think the initial happenings of quarantine and things like that were a huge shock. And I think especially for people of color and especially for women, like we're at a place right now where we can't afford to be shocked, and we can't afford to be surprised, and we can't afford, not saying that we can't be, but we just can't sit there forever. And so I'm hopeful for the art that we're going to have to just choose to create. And I feel like it's becoming so much more of a, I don't know, just like unity in womanhood, and especially in Black womanhood, is just so strong right now. And it's so significant. I've always, you know, had Black friends and a Black family, but like, I'm just feeling so much more like my whole life, anytime I was out in public with like a Black guy, so like my dad, most of my life, you know, he would always nod at another Black man. Like that was like always the thing. They always did. I never saw that with Black women. It was like maybe sometimes there'll be interaction, but now like there always is interaction with another Black woman that I see. And there's on social media, another Black artist, another Black guitar player. I mean, it's like almost immediate. It's like, hey, sis, how are you, sis? Like, you okay? You know, our family went to the farmer's market the other day, and this Black lady walked past us. She was like, hey, family. How y'all doing, family? And I've never had like, and I mean, I grew up in Atlanta. You know, it's like there's a lot of Black women there. I don't know if we were all just going through our own thing, or maybe I was the one going through my own thing, so I just didn't notice. Whatever it is, I feel like there's this a unity that's happening with Black women that has been like never before. I think we're all suffering and hurting in different ways for different reasons. And we're all at a point where it's like, look, baby, I can't make nothing for about 6 months. I'm a Venmo you. You do it. I'm gonna push you to the top. And when you tired, yes, baby, I got you, okay? And I'm gonna go make a baby. I'm gonna go have another one. And when we tired, that baby gonna take over. Like, I just feel like that's kind of happening. And especially in the spaces of art and podcasts and stuff, like, I mean, like 2 years ago, I would have never been invited to be on a podcast with other Black ladies. So I'm just like, dude, this is new. This is new, and I like it. I don't know what maybe it's me. Maybe I was in the wrong space. Maybe I missed the invitation, but no, because nobody sent it, but I got it now, and I'm here.
Well, so we're glad you're here with us.
We're glad you're here too. Jamie, you are delightful and incredible. And I'm so grateful that we got this time together. You guys, her book is awesome. There were so many great quotes we highlighted when we were reading her story. Thank you so much for sharing so openly and honestly with us. The book is truly a blessing.
Of course.
Everybody who listens to this podcast, I will be personally offended if you do not go out and buy Jamie's book wherever That's right. books are sold. But prioritize Black-owned bookstores. Don't forget. And yeah, now we're ready for Go Off, Sis.
This is our favorite segment. Our favorite segment and yours. So this is a time where we talk about something that we're loving, our blessed, and also something that's a mess. So this is our time to go off, sis. I'm going to get us kicked off. I want to say that mostly this is not deep at all, but it does show the power of social media and activism when we want to keep our shows. I do want to also say a few other things, which I will get to. Manifest season 4 is back, thanks to collective activism of people saying, Netflix, do right by this show and let us have closure. Okay, all we want is closure. That's all we want. I started watching it like a month or two ago just to watch something, and then I got hooked. And then people were telling me that there is no end. And I said, what? And so then I was like, we need an end. So, you know, pressure has helped. There is going to be an end, which I do appreciate deeply. But what I do want to say to the what, as Kev on stage would say, the what executives on HBO, why didn't you bring back Lovecraft Country? Because we did cry out about that show. We did protest and we did say we want it back. There was a whole plan for season 2 and Lovecraft was canceled. So, you know, I want to say that we see how activism has worked for a what show, Manifest. And even though I'm invested in watching it, I am upset that Lovecraft was canceled. Upset.
Lovecraft had so many good reviews.
I mean, I'm personally offended.
I don't understand that. I mean, I didn't watch it because I don't like scary things, but it seemed like everybody else was watching it.
I sure
and
was.
Very popular. And Jordan
like
Peele
this,
is
but
like,
I watched it.
You know, king of Hollywood
no,
right now.
Yeah, I mean, it's Misha Green brilliantly directed that whole show. And I mean, there were some scenes where I was like this, you know, eyes closed, hands up. I watched it with friends, but I loved it. I loved the creativity. It was the storytelling, the creativity, and the fact that Black people can make sci-fi movies too. That's what I love, that it was out of the box. It wasn't just, you know, one of those like, you know, The Holiday or, you know, My Best Friend's Wedding. It's not the typical Black comedy stuff. You know, I love them, but it was different. So
there's that.
My mess, which I'm going to say very quickly, unfortunately, really sad for the people who are in the pathway of Hurricane Ida. So please pray for those people. It takes a really long time to recover from a hurricane. My dad's house flooded during Harvey and it was just super traumatizing. So y'all pray, find organizations, people to donate to as these people rebuild their lives. I know that was a very quick turn from hilarious to tragic. But anyways, let's support those people and just, you know, be praying for the people rebuilding their lives in the midst of a pandemonium right now.
That was good. Okay, I feel like there are a lot of things that are a mess in the world right now. And it was very hard for me to pick one. I always like to start with my mess and end with a bless because, you know, I like to be hopeful and positive. But especially in this environment, in this panini. So my mess, I will say this. For people that are pro-life, I really want you to think about an environment and a world where we encourage women to have children. We want that to be the policy outcome. We want that to be the outcome, but we do not want to provide healthcare for that child. We do not want to provide paid family leave for that mother. God forbid it be a mother, a Mexican mother along the border, or an Afghan, or a woman from Afghanistan. We don't think about those women as much. We do not care that she cannot send her child to school because we refuse to wear masks and get vaccinated. We do not care that her child is being traumatized by having to do school shooting drills. And I just really would encourage the pro-life community to adopt a more expansive view, because I guarantee you more women would be willing and would be less likely to consider abortion if there were things like paid family leave, if they had access to healthcare and quality schools, and we did something about gun violence, and to care about refugees and immigrants, and not to be so selfish in our activism where it's just have this baby and then you're on your own. And so my mess is just for sort of the collective culture that puts so much pressure on women to have children, but does not want to provide any sort of support for women, both in the United States and globally. Oh, that was very succinct. I really was worried about that. Okay, my bless is very silly as well. I have a mess that is silly, but I feel like it's an important statement. So I've been watching on HBO Max this show called The Hype, which is like Project Runway meets streetwear. Highly recommend it.
Oh my God, I need to watch that.
Guys, it is so good. Cardi B's Offset is one of the judges. It's great. But I will say it is a mess that Paige, the only black woman, well, not the only black woman, one of the more talented black female designers, does not make it to the end. Her sort of whole aura thing is about how black creatives don't get paid as much or paid as much attention as white creatives. And when you think about streetwear, I'm just going to say that I would not think about streetwear without black people, without black culture. And so I'm very upset about how they did my girl Paige. And then my bless is I've read a lot of really good books so far. And I'm going to recommend Clinton Smith's How the Word is Passed. He basically visits sort of these historical sites in the United States. And his basic sort of premise is he's trying to understand why we tell the story about slavery that we tell. It is kind of heavy, but he's a beautiful writer. And it's just, I'm learning so much that I didn't know about slavery and enslavement and enslaved people. And also, too, he does a really great job of connecting history with the present. And since we are living in a time when people want to tell a whitewashed version of history, I'm all about celebrating good history and good historical knowledge. So How the Word Was Passed is my bless. Jamie.
That was so good, guys. I don't know if you guys like post this visual or not, but I'll at least say for you guys, if I seemed a little distracted, it was because I was trying to like make sure I had mine together, because y'all's were so good. I was like, wait, let me get my phone out. Like, I'm not about to mess this up. Pun intended. Okay. So I'm going to do the same thing that you did. I'm going to like do like mess first. So mess, this is like hard to even say, because I get really angry about this, but I genuinely like want to share this because it's something that's really close to my heart. So I'm going to say the mess is the U.S. foster care system, and just the way that people are oftentimes treated unfairly. There is a beautiful side to it that I believe that a lot of families have been able to be reunified. A lot of biological parents have been able to grow and receive support. And a lot of children have been placed in really safe and loving homes. So that is obviously great. But there are times where things are done unjust, and there's something called medical kidnapping. And recently in the news, there's an artist named Saisha. She went through this with two of her children. And so if you want to know more about this, like I talk about it like on my Instagram story, I have a foster care highlight on my profile. I sound like a 90-year-old on my page on the Instagram. In my top five friends on my MySpace, I have a highlight about foster care where I talk about it and give links and stuff, because I think that more people need to be active in the foster care system, just serving biological families and serving families to be reunified and be reconnected. And then in the case where children are unable to be reunified with their parents, I think that more people need to be providing safe and loving homes that are advocating for those children and their mental health as they grow up and navigate an entirely new world. But even if you're not able to be that home, it's like we can all do something. Like there's literally a Facebook group for every city, every county where it's foster and adoptive. Like join one of those Facebook groups, wash a bunch of like of the clothes that you're not wearing and all this stuff, post pictures and say, hey, are there any bio moms that might need a suit or, you know, a pantsuit for a job interview or something like that? And then that biological mom that's trying to get a job, trying to get her 5-year-old back, she might be able to like save $50 on going to Dillard's or something, and you've blessed her family. So there's something that everybody can do. I'm really passionate about foster care and about kids that need safer environments. So that is the mess. Okay, bless. I'm going to say fall television. Just in general, sometimes during the summer, I know that I have mental health issues, but sometimes I'm just like, why am I so sad? And I'm like, oh, TV, True. It's gone. We didn't watch like TV at all growing up. And so, well, kind of sometimes, but not really. So when I went to college, I went wild and I started watching, you know, nothing risque, but just like, you know, network TV, like love Parenthood, like Black-ish. I love my shows. And so like we get The Masked Singer. I love that show. We have 9-1-1. Yep. We have The Rookie. The Rookie in a very gracious way handle like police brutality and stuff. Like these shows, these are good shows, guys. And we got to save network television because Netflix, I mean, they're great, but I like my antenna and I like regular little TV. And I like it. And I like fall TV. So I'm really excited. So the week of September 20th, everybody comes back. And my poor little 2-year-old, she ain't going to see me ever again. I'm just kidding. Yeah, because I'm just going to be watching TV. I'm so excited. Like, go hang out with your dad. That's why I married him, because he's good at this. Bye.
Yeah, save fall TV. Yeah, save network TV. Equalizer, Queen Latifah. I have recently gotten back into network TV, because sometimes Netflix is doing a little too much for my taste.
I do like network TV as well.
Yeah. I think that there needs to be a rating in between PG and PG-13. I think it used to be PG-13, but then PG-13 just got risque. Because now everything's like, I'm going to like take off my clothes and show you how hot I am. I'm like, look, I know this sounds terrible coming from a so-called Christian influencer, but I would like to see murder. And I would like to see fictional murder, only fictional. And I would like to see it be solved. And then the murderer goes to prison, but also in a just way. And he's rehabilitized. And then it says the end. See you next week. That's like, I don't want to see sex. I don't need to see that. No, like, not trying to be funny, y'all. I'm married. I'll go have it. I would like to see murder.
Oh my gosh.
So that's what I'm here for. Law and Order's coming back. Excited
you're
about that.
Go after my own heart. Like serial. Like if you're not going to drop all the episodes at once, you need to solve the murder within the episode. Otherwise, I'm not trying to wait.
Thank you.
To the end of the season.
Yeah. And I need a cliche twist too. You know what I mean? Like, I don't need to be too surprised. I don't need to see all the blood. I don't need it to be pulled from the headlines. It doesn't have to be that dark. I just need a good old fashioned, this man's dead. Was it his neighbor? No, it was the neighbor's neighbor. Like, oh, how did that happen? That's all I need. I just need good classic network fall TV. Thank you.
Yes. That's why I'm a network TV girl, because I know by the end of this 45 minutes, I'm going to know who did it and they are going to be in jail. We want to thank our guest, Jamie Grace, for joining us today. We are so glad to be back with you guys this season. Thank you so much for joining us. Please be sure to subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. Tell your friends about us. They can find us wherever they listen to podcasts. Help others find our podcast by rating and reviewing us in Apple Podcasts. Please join our Patreon community and follow us on social media at Melanated Faith. Bye.
Bye, y'all.